Jonathan, if you had to sum up in a word the experience of covering Donald Trump's financial situation right now, how would you put it?
I would say roller coaster.
At stake, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars in penalties and the Trump Organization's ability to do business in New York.
Let me tell you that shares in Donald Trump's social media company have soared.
It's a rough ride on Wall Street for Donald Trump. His Truth Social stock has plummeted.
Ups and downs, and maybe now we're somewhere in between.
Do you like amusement parks?
I go to them. I don't usually ride the roller coasters, though, I'll say.
Just at work. This is Jonathan O'Connell. He's an investigative reporter for The Post, and he covers Trump's businesses and finances. Recently, that has meant reporting on a serious cash crunch for Trump because of a penalty he was ordered to pay by a judge in New York for committing fraud.
And if you add the interest that is part of that penalty, it's a penalty of over $450 million.
A lot of money.
Yes, and they gave him 30 days to pay it.
So not a lot of time.
Exactly. And no matter how rich you are, coming up with that much money that quickly is going to be difficult. Nobody just like has their money just like sitting around under the mattress ready to distribute at any point. In particular, his is in real estate, which you cannot really sell in 30 days. You can't sell a golf course in 30 days, much less like 10 golf courses.
So then what happened? Who stepped in to help him out?
So he needed to put up a bond in order to stay the penalty. And a billionaire from California, an 80-year-old billionaire who is a political supporter of his, called him up and said he would be happy to help with the bond.
This is billionaire Don Hanke. He's the owner of the insurance company that just put up the $175 million bond in Trump's New York.
This is Don Hanke. He runs a number of different businesses and has been in business for quite a while. The business he is best known for is issuing subprime auto loans. So most of the people who are borrowers of that business have, like, usually not great credit, and he issues them loans to buy cars at very high interest rates. He's worth billions of dollars. I mean, he's one of the wealthiest Americans.
So Don Hanke steps in and saves the day, offering to put up the $450 million if Trump can't. And then Trump catches another break. A court says he only needs to put up $175 million while he appeals the civil fraud ruling.
That was like a real turning point for him, because otherwise we were writing about what experts thought he should do in that situation, what other lawyers would advise him to do. And it was like, well, you better look at bankruptcy, buddy, because this is like an unintendable situation.
Hanke thinks he's off the hook. But then Trump's folks ask him, actually, can you still put up this money? From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Elahe Izadi. It's Monday, April 8th. Today, Jonathan helps us understand Trump's complicated financial situation as he runs for president. We talk about how Trump's legal bills, social media company, and campaign funds all fit together. Plus, what we know about this billionaire who offered to bail Trump out. Why should we care about this particular situation with this guy, Don Hanke? And what does this tell us about Trump's current situation going forward?
I mean, it's an amazing turnaround for Trump from a month ago. I mean, when he got that enormous financial penalty levied against him right after he'd had another one, I mean, it's just an enormous amount of money to have to put up in a very short period of time. I mean, he really went from a really, really tough position of illiquidity, which is like not having money you can spread or like move around easily, to seeming like he's probably going to be okay. And that's the big turnaround. Hanke obviously played a big role in that.
So what's in it for him?
Well, normally somebody putting up a bond like that is charging a great interest rate and charging a whole bunch of fees on top of it, just like he did to a lot of people borrowing from him to buy cars. We don't know the specific terms of the deal, obviously, but he has said it's, he gave it to him at like sort of a nice deal.
So, Jonathan, I would love to now take a step back here. And as I've been reading your coverage, it's kind of amazing to me because if I were to think back to 2015, 2016 campaign when Trump was running, at that time, one of the big selling points he was presenting to the American public and to his supporters was, hey, I'm a businessman. I'm successful. I mean, I know there's a huge sordid history around how he's previously declared for bankruptcy and all these things. Nevertheless, that was his image on the campaign trail that he was trying to sell. And so now here he is taking a loan from this guy who gives people with bad credit high interest loans to pay his bond, to pay Trump's bond. So I would love to know, how did Trump get here? So let's go back to this civil fraud case. What's the origin of it? Walk me through how it proceeded and where are we right now with it?
Oh, delightful. Yes. For many years, Donald Trump was mostly a real estate developer and business-wise. And he would prepare these documents called statements of financial condition that would list all of his assets and liabilities, ostensibly. And he would hand these out to banks, to insurance companies, to potential business partners as a way of showing how much money he has. Because that's, you know, at some level, that's what you're doing when you go to a bank and ask for a loan. You are showing them, okay, this is my financial position. I'm looking for a loan.
Right.
He's doing that.
Like I can pay it back. These are my assets. This is what I'm worth. You should give me more money because I'm good for it.
Yeah. It's not too dissimilar for if you look for a mortgage for your house. The bank wants to know where your assets and liabilities are.
Right.
Same type of thing.
Except we're talking about hotels and that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's hotels, there's golf courses, but it's a very similar ledger for the most part. And he is putting things on there that are just like obviously untrue. He is inflating the size of his properties. He's inflating their value enormously. He's saying that his own apartment in Trump Tower is three times the size it actually is. He's saying he has the rights to build homes on lands he has no rights. And you're not allowed to do this. If you look at state law in New York, you may not intentionally pass bad financial information to banks and insurance companies. It's pretty plainly written. Now, that doesn't mean it's enforced all the time. Lots of companies at some level, when they go to a bank, are putting their best foot forward. They're saying, oh, you know, maybe my assets are, you know, they're making their assets look as good as they can.
It's like a cover letter.
Yes, exactly. You don't put all your dirt on your cover letter.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But you don't probably shouldn't also lie on your cover letter.
Good
and
point.
That's the distinctions that have been meaningful in the case, I think.
Okay. So he's made these statements that are not true in order to secure more money and more loans to do more business. So then what happened?
Well, the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, decides to make a real big issue of it.
We have a responsibility to protect the integrity of the marketplace. And for years, Donald Trump engaged in deceptive business practices and tremendous fraud.
And she spends months and months digging through all of his stuff. And she gets access to everything. I mean, all of his paperwork. She interviews lots of people who have worked for him, consultants. She looks at his tax records. She interviews people who he has worked with. She deposes him, Donald Trump Jr., Eric Trump, Ivanka Trump, and she brings this massive lawsuit against his company, against him, his two eldest sons, and a bunch of other companies and two of his executives. And, you know, when this happened, you know, I sort of figured at this time, okay, she sued him. You know, maybe he'll pay a fine. There'll be some type of settlement. But no, there's no settlement. They go to trial. And they get a judge who really takes an issue with what Trump has done here. He goes through all the documents that Trump has passed out. He reads the depositions. And before the trial even starts, he rules that Trump has violated all sorts of rules ahead of time. So he's basically ruled that Trump has passed fraudulent business information and financial information illegally to all of these banks and insurance companies before they even get in the courtroom. So Trump is immediately like, whoa. What's happened here? Like, this is serious.
Right.
And so when the trial actually starts, you see Trump showing up every day, even though this is not a criminal trial.
This is a continuation of the single greatest witch hunt of all time. We have a rogue judge.
And not only, you know, he's showing up, and then in the intermissions, he's talking smack about the judge and talking smack about the clerk and also the prosecutors and the attorney general. He's like going full bore against everybody once the trial starts.
Inside the courtroom, Trump spoke briefly, calling the proceedings, quote, a fraud on me, before the judge cut him off.
And then when did the trial conclude and what was the result of it?
In February, the judge made that ruling, that order, where he instituted a $350 million penalty, which in New York State includes interest, which is going to make it over $450 million. And then he has a number of other parts of the order. He puts a court monitor in charge of Trump's business for 3 years. This is a former federal judge, Barbara S. Jones. She has accountants she's hired. She has a team of lawyers who are going through any financial transactions he's trying to do.
She has to run it by them.
She is there all the time. She's monitoring everything he's doing.
How's Trump reacted to all? How has he reacted to the ruling and also the court monitor?
He's not, he is not happy about any of it.
It's a very sad day for, in my opinion, the country. A New York State judge just ruled that he's crooked as you could get.
I mean, he says that the judge is corrupt. He says Letitia James is corrupt. And he points out some of the comments Letitia James made in her own campaign before she won about how she was going to go after Trump, mm-hmm. how she was going to sue Trump as trying to sort of disqualify what she's doing here. The financial penalties, I think, have been the thing that he has reacted most strongly to, though.
And he's appealed, yeah?
Yes, he has appealed. And that is actually the reason for this bond.
Okay.
If he wants to appeal without having to pay, he has to get a bond.
So that brings me back to Don Hankey and him swooping in to help Trump out in this moment. What would have happened if Don hadn't come in or if Trump just couldn't have paid?
We don't fully know Trump's finances, but we have a lot of information about them. I think it would, and he's acknowledged, and his lawyers have acknowledged, putting up a bond for $450 million wasn't going to happen. They didn't have the money, and mm-hmm. it wouldn't have happened in that time period. And Letitia James, the AG, was saying, okay, I'm going to start taking your properties. I'm going to start taking your assets.
Like your golf courses or what kind of properties?
I mean, she could, by law, she could go to his banks. She knows where his accounts are and start draining his accounts like in a day if she really
would. Wow.
Yeah, it was a regrettably like precarious situation for Trump. And she could go to her golf courses. I mean, literally when this happens with other cases, the people that are enforcing these rules or these judgments can go to people's homes and say, like, we'll take all the artwork off your walls. We'll take your Lamborghini.
It's like a foreclosure or something.
It's
very similar. Like you have like a state marshal come in and just be like, all right, this is ours now.
New York City marshal, that's right. Or the New York City sheriff, depending on what you're going after. But yes, then that was like something she was talking about publicly. We're going to start coming after your stuff if you don't pay up.
So couldn't he have filed for bankruptcy to avoid all of this? Isn't this one of the reasons people do file for bankruptcy? Why didn't he do that?
So if he had filed for personal bankruptcy, if he had personally said, I am bankrupt, I cannot pay my debts, all this would have stopped. Everybody who is owed money by him gets in line and it goes into federal court and it takes forever. And that's one of the reasons I think some people in his camp thought is a decent option. All this mess with all these penalties, these cash crunch, it all just gets set aside for now.
And hasn't he done it before?
He has filed for corporate bankruptcy before. He's put six of his businesses into bankruptcy.
Okay.
And that might have been the more likely scenario here because he is obviously running for president. It's not great probably on the campaign trail to say like, I just filed for bankruptcy. But you could say, look, I put this business into bankruptcy or this other business into bankruptcy because of this judge I feel is corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's a little bit more politically palatable.
So then why didn't he do any of that?
Well, when the court gave him more time and reduced the amount, that was like such a saving moment for him. Like he got more time. The amount was reduced to something that was much more manageable. And then here comes Hankey calling up out of the blue, says he's never met Donald Trump in his life, says he's never spoken to Donald Trump in his life. And he is interested in providing this bond for a number of reasons, one of which he feels Donald Trump is being treated unfairly. He thinks lots of people inflate their assets and, you know, sort of downplay or lie about their liabilities or debts. And he says he's seen that in his various businesses over the years where he is, you know, considering the risk of various borrowers for cars and other products. So he feels like Donald Trump is being targeted unfairly and he wants to step in and be there for him.
And I think the question that raises for me is what kind of influence does he now have over Trump? Because Trump could be president again.
Yes. This is going to be a huge question going forward, not only for Hankey, but for other people who have. I mean, for instance, there is another bond that Trump has in the case with E. Jean Carroll, the defamation case. That's a $100 million bond that was put up by Chubb Insurance, a big insurance company. Does the CEO of Chubb Insurance expect any favors from Trump if he is reelected as president? I don't know, but he, you know, certainly came in and helped Trump out of that jam as well. So Hanke, you know, obviously Hanke has political interests. I mean, his company has been fined a number of times for various violations. He has made political donations before to Trump and also to Democrats in the past, but prefers Republicans generally. And, you know, it's unknown what he, if anything, expects. He said he did not make this deal for political reasons, but for business reasons.
Is this actually going to work?
That's actually a great question also. It's still TBD. The bond has been filed, but the attorney general immediately contested it. And this is something that's changing sort of by the hour right now. The AG has pointed out, I think correctly, that Mr. Hanke's company is not registered in New York to do this. They have never done it before. They are not licensed in New York to do this. They need a certificate to do it. They don't have that either. There are some other rules about if you want to put up a bond, about how much sort of free cash you have on hand as a sort of protection for the court to make sure they will eventually get paid.
Right.
I mean, if you, for instance, file the bond for $175 million for somebody,
you know,
the court would want to know in one scenario that you had at least 10 times that amount.
Okay.
And
Hanke, to protect themselves.
Yes. And Hanke may have to show in a more direct way what kind of assets he's putting in front of the court as sort of collateral for the bond that he's putting up. And he hasn't done that. So we now have another hearing scheduled for this exact topic, April 22nd.
Wow. Okay. So, you know, I'm so many more questions, but this is wild.
That's the roller coaster right there.
Yeah, that is the roller coaster right there. After the break, we talk about what else Trump owes and what could be his saving grace, his stake in his social media company, Truth Social. We'll be right back. You know, Jonathan, one thing I've been wondering about when we are talking about Donald Trump's financial situation, the precarious financial situation he finds himself in, you know, we've been talking a lot about this one case, but there are other things in his orbit right now. There is the case that involved E. Jean Carroll, but just more broadly and generally, how much does Trump currently owe?
E. Jean Carroll had sued Donald Trump multiple times for defamation and kept winning. And he, in order to stay, to pause that penalty while he appealed that case, he needed a bond of $90 or $100 million. And Chubb Insurance Company provided that for him.
Okay.
So that $100 million is kind of set aside. Then he needs another, you know, at this point, $175 million. So he has, Don Hanke says, Trump has provided $175 million in some fashion that Hanke is confident in. But that's now we're at, you know, $375 million plus various fees and penalties, interest, et cetera. So he is paying an enormous amount in legal fees all the time. I mean, he has all these criminal cases he's fighting. He has civil cases he's fighting. He has, I mean, the legal fees alone, I mean, are just incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Jonathan, that brings me to another big question I had, which is the role that Donald Trump's social media company plays, Truth Social. When it first went public, it was valued at around $8 billion. You know, I know that that changes over time. So I want to understand, how does this company, which seems to be very valuable, does that factor into this? Because in one sense, you know, the picture you're painting for me is, oh, he's running up a huge tab here and he's cash strapped majorly. And yet he has this company that seems to be worth billions of dollars. So how do those two things intersect?
It's incredible rabbit out of the hat moment. It really is. I mean, if you look at Donald Trump's history, he has started so many different businesses. Some of them have worked. Some of them failed. Some of them are criminally fraudulent, as has been shown. In this case, you're right. He starts his own social media company with the help of some advisors. He, to his credit, has been very diligent at staying on his own platform and not, he's no longer on X, really. He doesn't use it. He is focused on using, putting his best stuff on his own company's site.
I'm using his political popularity to bolster this company.
Monetizing his political popularity in a way that I don't think anyone expected would be this successful. The company is now publicly traded under the symbol DJT. He has, I think, around 77 million shares in it. And, you know, if you look at the share price as of like late last week, his stake just for him is worth between $3 and $4 billion, which again, we've kind of talked about a lot of the expenses and costs that he has. $3 and $4 billion eclipses all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not like he just has $3.5 billion sitting in his checking account. So it is complicated to like access that quickly, but like, it's getting easier.
Can he just like sell it? He can't just sell it off right now.
The rules are that he's not supposed to sell shares for the first 6 months. There's a possibility he could get out of that. For the most part, though, it's looking like he's going to have to hold on to it for 6 months. But then, yeah, these are publicly traded shares. Anybody can buy them. Anyone can sell them. If he wants to sell $500 million worth of shares in 6 months and like use that either for his campaign or for his own financial, you know, issues, there's nothing that I can see that would stop him.
And what else do we know about this company's actual value?
I mean, this is an incredible story, partly because what we're talking about here in terms of the stock is it's really a meme stock. People buy it because they want to be a part of something.
Uh-huh.
They want to be a part of Trump's, they want to support Trump because they think he's good or they love his politics, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
or they think it's cool or funny or whatever.
And it props up the price.
Yeah, and it's incredibly valuable because of that, not because of the fundamentals of the business. No analysis that I've seen of it sees a real path or certainly a coherent path to becoming like a big profitable social media company. It's really because he is personally affiliated with it. Now, like, and because of that, who knows what will happen with it? I mean, you could say, and a lot of experts have said, if he sells the most of shares, the value will go down because people will see he's selling.
I don't believe in this anymore.
But if he goes and says, listen, I'm selling some shares, stay with me though. Keep this price up, support the movement, stick with me. And he's putting it on Truth Social. I don't know why people wouldn't keep doing it and keep the share price up. You know, I'm a little skeptical from the folks who say, oh, he can't sell a bunch of shares, it'll collapse. I mean, he has proven for so many years now that people will follow him.
Yeah.
And follow him through like way worse things, indictments, impeachments, you know, et cetera. And here he is saying, listen, just stick with me on this share price. I could think that maybe people would buy it up for him. I could see that.
So how does this interact with his ability to fundraise? Because he is also running for president. I mean, he has all of these other, you know, I guess for lack of a better word, bills piling up.
Yeah.
On a personal note and with his business, but he's also running for president. So how does that intersect with the campaign? Because you have to raise money to run for president.
I mean, thinking about his schedule every day is just like stresses me out just to think about it with all the court dates and like financial things he has to deal with. And politics. I mean, it must be absolutely insane. Listen, Joe Biden has raised much more money than Donald Trump has in this campaign and has a huge financial lead in terms of money that he can spend. Trump has said he's going to spend some of his own money on the campaign. Now, listen, this gets back to your question about he's got $100 million locked up on the one bond. He's got $175 million locked up on the other bond. We know according to him, he didn't have 450. So like he's tied up a lot of his free cash probably. Does he want to sell a bunch of real estate and put some money in his campaign that way? Does he want to sell a bunch of shares in Truth Social and put some money in his campaign that way? Is he actually not going to put that much of his own money into his campaign? Those seem to be the options.
So Jonathan, if Trump becomes president, could debt collectors still come after him? Like what kind of world would we enter?
A lot of the moves that he's made financially the last few months really seem to be about buying time. Just getting to the election before any of these things become a real crisis. So even on, you know, E. Jean Carroll, we talked about the fraud case. Those are enormous financial penalties. They don't go away because he put up the bonds. They're just halted. And it buys him time and the appeals process to play out. And it takes months for every court to consider anything he's done. So he's effectively set those aside. But like, there's no technical reason why they wouldn't still apply to him if he becomes president.
Mm.
Now, listen, what's the process for the New York Attorney General collecting on these financial penalties if he decides not to pay and he's the sitting president of the United States? I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what that would look like. There's no legal reason why she couldn't collect, though.
Yeah. Jonathan, I think this also brings me back to this bigger existential question of what does it mean for a president to not be poor, but broke. I think those are two different things, right?
Yeah.
Because we've had presidents before who don't have a lot in net assets. But if Trump were to become president and he owes a lot of money to a lot of people, why does that matter that the president of the United States would be in that sort of financial situation?
I mean, I think anybody who has read anything about like what it means to work for in national security for our country knows that one of the first things that, you know, whether it's the FBI, DOJ, whoever you're trying to work for, they don't want to see people as employees who have debts because then they become beholden to others. And there is some risk of that with any president or elected official who is like beholden to a lot of people for debts. How that will play out if Trump is reelected is unknown. I think the scary thing for me is we're probably not going to have all of the information about who is providing him money and what he owes to them. When Trump was first elected, he owned real estate and he had debts on some of that real estate. And when you become a candidate for office or you're elected, you have to show the government what you have in terms of debts and liabilities. And he did that. He filed a report with the Office of Government Ethics and it shows the banks that had loans with him. You know, but take Trump separately for a second. If, you know, wealthy people or wealthy interests, special interests, et cetera, want to get money to a politician through, you know, a series of LLCs or workarounds, et cetera, it's probably doable. And he has a lot of avenues to do that if he wants to. You know, he has to have a certain number of insurers and now he has bonds, he has legal problems. There's just a lot of avenues for one to provide him money if they want to, and not all of them are probably going to be public.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for joining and explaining all this to me. I will continue to ride the roller coaster with you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Jonathan O'Connell is an investigative reporter. He covers Trump's businesses and finances for The Post. There's another Trump case I'm watching. His first criminal trial begins in New York 1 week from today. This is the trial related to hush money payments made to adult film actress Stormy Daniels during the 2016 campaign. Trump has pleaded not guilty to 34 felony counts of falsifying business records, and his team asked for a significant delay last month after prosecutors turned over new potential evidence. The judge pushed the trial back just a few weeks to start Monday, April 15th. This will be the first time a former U.S. president goes to trial on criminal charges. And before we go, there is one other story we've been following closely today.
Oh, it's disappearing. It's almost gone.
For the first time since 2017, those of us in the United States got to experience a total solar eclipse. My co-host Martine Powers traveled to Indiana so she could witness this celestial event in its full glory.
Oh my gosh.
That is incredible.
Oh my God, okay. Wow, it's just a 360 sunset. That's exactly like they described. It's just a sunset in every direction.
The next time this will happen across the U.S. is 2045. We hope you were able to take a moment today to enjoy this astonishing sight. Safely, of course. And in case you missed it, Martine talked with science journalist Kasia Patel last week about what scientists can learn from the eclipse. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Alana Gordon. It was mixed by Sean Carter. It was edited by Maggie Penman with help from Peter Bresnan and Emma Brown. I'm Elahe Izadi. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.